The trader used to say that the only possible way to use a knife effectively was to go in point first.
Gets there quickest and sharpest.
Ryan's attacker was so confident in his superior speed and strength, combined with total surprise, that he tried to carry out the killing in silence. He locked a wiry forearm around the throat of the one-eyed man, cutting off air and choking back any possible cry for help. But even as the knife came back for the butchering blow to the heart, Ryan was reacting, his own razor-honed reflexes slipping him instantly into combat mode. There was the immediate realization that he was about to be stabbed. If he tried to pull away forward, then the arm tied across his throat would hold him still, making him literally a sitting target. Digging his feet into the treacherous shifting sand, Ryan powered himself backward. Twisting as he moved, his right arm cut behind him to parry the blow that he knew would be on its way. Feeling the jarring of flesh against flesh, his left hand, fingers stiffened, lunged toward the invisible face of his attacker, stabbing at the eyes, coming close enough to make the assailant flinch. The grip on Ryan's neck loosened, and he wrenched himself clear, rolling forward and sideways, finishing up on the edge of the sea with water splashing at his ankles. The shadowy figure recovered more quickly than Ryan had expected, giving him no time to draw the panga from its soft leather sheath, rushing in at him, the moonlight glinting on the cold steel of his own knife. Ryan dodged again, hands out to try to fend off the darting lunges of the knife, backing away until he was nearly knee-deep in the water. At least now he could see what he was up against. The man was about 5'6", nearly 9 inches shorter than Ryan. He had a muscular build, with broad shoulders tapering to a slender waist and slim hips. His long hair was as black as a raven's wing, tied back with a strip of light-colored cloth. His eyes were narrow, his cheekbones heavy, his mouth a slit of murderous hatred. Ryan guessed that the attacker was probably an Indian, maybe a Seminole, but none of that information was worth a flying fart at the moment. All that mattered was that he was out to kill Ryan, the point of the knife flickering in and out toward Ryan's stomach, forcing him deeper and deeper into the cool, sucking surf. There was no chance to snatch the hilt of the panga. The sea was now riding at Ryan's waist, the swell making it hard to keep his balance. But it was more difficult for the shorter man. The moment came. The Indian stopped to gather his breath and wait out a larger-than-average wave. Ryan drew the 18-inch blade from his belt and tightened his fingers around the water-slick hilt.
Right, you back-ripping son of a bitch.
Now all the advantages rested with Ryan. Height, power, and the extra foot of steel in his hand. The Seminole started to shuffle sideways, parallel to the beach, the moon shining in his blank eyes. Ryan had the ace on the line now, content to wait and patiently close in. He had already checked along the line of the land to make sure that his attacker didn't have any reinforcements rushing to his rescue.
You deserve death. You and everyone you brought here.
Ryan was puzzled by that, but he wasn't about to stop and engage his putative murderer in a philosophical discussion. He had already figured that the shorter man now had only one slender chance of winning the fight, so when the move came, Ryan was ready for it. The Seminole whipped his arm back and hurled the broad-bladed knife at the face of the one-eyed man who was coming at him out of the sea. A tiny spray of sparks was generated as Ryan met it with the side of the panga. The knife sang over the waves and splashed into the water 40 yards behind them. Inevitably, Ryan had closed his eye at the last moment. Now he opened it again, and his opponent had gone.
Fire blast!
The wiry Indian had doubled his chances. If the knife had struck its target, then Ryan would probably be dead, or badly wounded. If it missed, he had a second or so to dive beneath the dark, impenetrable water and try to swim as far as possible from Ryan before breaking surface again.
Which way?
The man could easily have a second knife, could be coming straight at Ryan, under the mirrored surface of the Atlantic. Just for a handful of heartbeats, Ryan felt the fluttering approach of panic. Once he had visited, 20 years ago now, a frontier gaudy that had both electric power and a working antique vid player. There'd been a scratched copy of some pre-dark film about a great white shark that came up and swallowed a naked girl, swimming in the sea at dead of night. It had always impressed Ryan, touching some primitive and atavistic terror. Mildred had recently said that 90% of all shark attacks took place in less than 5 feet of water. Ryan didn't know if that was true or not, but he knew that he felt exposed. The one place he guessed the Seminole wouldn't be trying for was back to the beach. He'd be too visible too soon if he swam that way. Moving a little faster than he really intended, Ryan stumbled on the shifting shingle as he ran for the land, battling against water that seemed to have 1,000 hands, all tugging at him to stop his reaching safety. Panting, he finally made it to the dry sand, holding the panga out in front of him like a religious icon, shaking his wet hair from his face. But the Indian seemed to have totally disappeared into the night. Ryan waited and watched. Unless he drowned, the man was going to have to come up for air in the next 10 or 15 seconds, 30 seconds at the very outside. Ryan bit his lip, cursing his decision to walk out without wearing a blaster on his hip. If he'd been carrying his trusty 9mm Sig Sauer, there was enough moonlight for him to be certain of picking off the escaping Indian. At that range, he could have put a single round through either eye.
There!
A dark head cautiously broke the surface, 50 or 60 yards off, turning toward the beach. The Indian saw Ryan standing and watching him, helpless to do anything to stop him from swimming away to safety. It crossed Ryan's mind to follow the Seminole along the shoreline, forcing him to stay out in the ocean. But if the man was strong enough in the water, he could lure Ryan so far away from the relative security of the Institute that he could find himself blundering into an ambush. The Indian yelled something to Ryan, the words vanishing into the night. But his gesture, with middle finger raised, was unmistakable. There was no profit in entering into a match of insults with someone beyond the power of harming him, so Ryan spun on his heel and began to walk toward the distant light of the buildings. Then he heard a strange sound, the clicking of dolphins, clear in the stillness, followed by a yell of shock and pain from the swimmer. There were a half dozen of the creatures circling the Seminole, as though they were a pack of wolves driving a recalcitrant buffalo. The sea was whipped up by their tails as they closed in on the helpless man, butting him and pushing him toward the shoreline.
I'll be a...
It was done with unbelievable speed and efficiency, almost as if the graceful mammals had been specifically trained to perform the capture.
Help me! Help me!
Fuck you!
Please! They're going to drown me!
I don't think so.
Help!
I don't reckon to help a piss yellow bastard who was going to stab me in the back.
Now the Indian was barely waist deep, spinning around and around to try to push off the dolphins as they nudged him farther into the shallows. He might as well have tried to harness a war wag with a length of wet string. Ryan waited patiently, glancing behind to make sure they were still alone. Now they were less than 10 yards apart.
Let me go, mister.
Why?
I haven't seen you before. You may be Outlander, not from White Coat Place.
What difference does that make?
The dolphins were now lying in a patient semicircle a few feet from their captive, closing off any hope of escape toward the open sea. Their whistling and clicking had ceased, and they were quite silent. The Seminole shook his head wearily.
You're right. Don't make no difference.
Ryan was taken by surprise when the man suddenly came splashing out of the water toward him, his fingers clawing in an attack of hopeless fury. It was so hopeless that it nearly worked. The Indian staggered, but still tried to twist away and run up the sloping beach toward the possible safety of the line of brush and palm trees. Ryan was after him, not intending to allow a second chance of escape. It was all over very quickly. Just as Ryan swung the panga around in a hissing arc, the Seminole half stumbled, then straightened in a clumsy, skipping sort of jump. He glanced over his shoulder into the eye of his grim-faced nemesis. The slicing blow had been aimed at the man's nape, below the bobbing ponytail. But it hit home under the left ear, the edge hacking between the jaws, splintering teeth, and shredding the ligament at the root of the tongue. Ryan had put so much power into it that the whole lower jaw was completely severed, falling away to the left, hanging on by a few shreds of skin and gristle on the right side. It was one of the most ghastly sights that Ryan had ever seen, and he held back, unable for a moment to strike the final, merciful killing blow. Ryan stopped, holding the panga at his side, staring at the macabre spectacle. Dying, the man was running in small circles, his feet kicking up a pattering spray of moist sand. He was close to the high water mark, and the rippled tide was washing away each footstep within seconds of its being made. As though he'd just received some supernatural call, the Indian stopped circling and ran arrow straight into the ocean. As soon as he was waist deep, he plunged forward and disappeared into the darkness. This time he didn't reappear, though Ryan waited several minutes to be sure.
Tommen was extremely concerned to hear about the Indian's murderous attack.
I must confess that there are times when my philanthropic views on my fellow man become more than a little jaded. We have done everything we can to try and help the Seminoles. They sail all the way from the swamps and bayous of the Mississippi Delta, and we trade with them. And then they come sneaking along in the darkness and attempt foul murder.